Today on the Cooligans, we recap the MLS Cup playoffs. Are we happy with this format? It still feels, we're still getting used to it.
It's all new.
Also, Naomi Girma got a brace, got her first goal, and was like, nah, put me up top, coach.
Plus, we talked to Brian Ford. This guy is a superstar baker, multiple books, multiple TV shows, and we find out, also kind of could have gone pro in football. Crazy is that? That and more today on the Cooligans. I was lucky enough to go to the Knicks, the home opener.
That's right. I saw that and I'm like, okay, Alexis at a level that I'm not at. Well, how is this happening?
Can I tell you something? Random phone call shouts to the homie. I don't want to say your name so you don't get asked for tickets.
Yeah.
But he had access. He got invited by the SNL writers.
Gotcha.
A group of SNL writers. SNL apparently has a group of tickets courtside.
Wow.
For the Knicks. So last minute, one of the guys says he can't go. So the group says, does anyone know a Knicks fan that would come? Mm. So I told wifey, she was like, yo, do you want to go get dinner? I was like, you know what? My stomach's a little upset. I don't want to go out. I'm actually tired. I was like, I don't want to go out. It was kind of late. It's like 6:30. I was like, I got a lot to do for the show tomorrow anyway, blah, blah, blah. Made a whole big deal. 20 minutes after that, we're sitting on the couch. I'm typing away. Writing my struggle bus. Shouts to everyone who watched and sent me nice messages about struggle bus. I'm writing the next one. I get a text from the homie. He says, yo, floor seats.
Knicks.
Home opener. And I said, when is this? Because I know it's tonight. And he goes, yo, it's now like 6:28.
Yeah.
It's at 7:30.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to do the math real quick.
And how am I going to lie to my wife in the correct man?
How can I get out of everything I said before? And now, mind you, I'm the one who's usually saying, like, let's go out to eat, right? Uh-huh. And wifey's like, nah, it's too late, blah, blah. I'm the one who said that. I made a whole thing about it. My stomach was a little upset, blah, blah, blah. I just looked at wife. I go, hey, I just got text. Knicks home opener.
Yeah.
Floor seats. I got to go. And she goes, oh, you do? And by the time she said that, I was already in the other room getting dressed.
my stomach hurts so much. I will sit in my own feces at Madison Square Garden
you
to
know
watch
what?
These Knicks.
I'm going to tuck a little toilet paper in there and we'll be all right, right?
Okay. They make adult diapers, babe.
Bro, I'm not. They're in the bodega for a reason.
Okay.
You usually can't put them on in there. But
it's for times like these.
It's very important.
And it was a big win, too.
It was a huge win. It was a massive game.
The Knicks won. The Yankees lost in the World Series.
Yeah, actually, the one day, a couple days ago, it was the first time that four professional sports teams in the same city all lost, including postseason. New York City FC lost to FC Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. The Yankees lost to the Dodgers. The Knicks lost to... Was it Minnesota?
Who did they play?
They lost to somebody.
Yeah, I forgot. They were away.
Mm-hmm. And the Giants lost.
That is not a surprise.
That's canon right now at this point. Bro, how crazy is that? Wifey was a little upset as I was leaving, then fine with it when I got back.
Okay.
She was like, okay. I looked it up and apparently it was a very important game.
I love it. She was fine after she dumped motor oil on my clothes.
For some reason, all of my sneakers have gashes in them, but
you know, it's something therapeutic about it.
I think it helped her more than it hurt me. So, but honestly, she was cool with it. She was like, okay, fine. I see it's important, but you said you didn't want to go out.
I mean, that's the nature of our lives. You know what I mean? Just trying to find a way to go to different sporting events without upsetting our wives too much.
Okay? And then if they go, it's a lot of explaining what's happening in the sporting events, which doesn't allow us to network.
Hey, look, getting a peek into our lives.
Right,
everybody.
A little BTS.
So, happy Halloween, everybody. Hey. Welcome to the Cooligans right here on Yahoo Sports. Crushing it per usual. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerrero.
Smashing on the Yahoo yodel button, okay? Okay, it gets a little crazy out here, right? This is, you know, all your favorite TikTok sounds are on this board.
We're waking you up.
Right? Excited about today. We have an incredible guest joining us in just a little bit. If you are a fan of bread making, bakeries, all right?
And if you're not, what are you doing listening to this show?
You're listening to the wrong show. How do you stumble upon this?
You should have your wife listen to this, and then she could, in real time, give you all the reasons why not to eat bread. Every time our guest says something,
it's in moderation. You got to talk about bread like you talk about alcohol a little bit.
This is why I love moderation, because it means different things to different people. You know what I mean?
Bread is, turns into carbs, turn carbs into sugar, the whole thing. You got to be careful with it. Anyway.
So should I just spoon sugar into my mouth as opposed to have a slice of bread?
So we're going to be joined by Brian.
That was a real question.
Brian Ford. I got my wife on the phone. We're going to be joined by Brian Ford. He has a new book coming out called Pan y Dulce.
Yeah. B-R-Y-A-N, Ford as in the car.
Exactly.
And by the way, this guy's got his coaching, his D license,
So he's an incredible footballer and also is an incredible baker as well. Bro. So we'll talk to him about everything in footy and bread. So if you are a person where the Venn diagram of these are two things that you enjoy, this is the perfect interview for you. So let's start today with the MLS Cup playoffs, which are happening right now. There's the matches since Monday. New York City FC played against FC Cincinnati, lost 1-0.
Yeah. Bro, why didn't Maxi start?
It's a choice. Yeah, I don't know.
It's a playoff game, bro.
The goal that was given up, just a bad giveaway from Santi.
Yeah, but they were, FC Cincinnati were on top of New York City FC.
They were, but still.
Orellano looked like, is this Messi in a different shirt?
Luca Orellano won goal of the year for the midfield goal that he scored against Montreal. But a bad giveaway from Santi, which led to a lot of confusion, and then giving up the goal to Yemi Asad. So not too much of a shock there, but obviously the game two at Citi Field
on Saturday
should be interesting. And also be on the lookout, because you might see your boys maybe on the field doing a couple things.
Heads or tails, maybe you'll see us.
So be on the lookout, especially at the beginning of game two against NYCFC against FC Cincinnati. Seattle, Houston. Kind of a bit of a snoozer. A red card to Coco Carrasquilla, which sort of changed.
That changes everything for Houston. The CONCACAF Player of the Year, which is kind of crazy,
kind of wild too. Yeah,
he is a great player though,
without a doubt. I think kind of overlooked a little bit because he plays in Houston.
CONCACAF Player of the Year.
You don't think he should be the CONCACAF Player of the Year? I get it. Yes.
Pulisic.
Alexis with the bold statement.
Pulisic.
The game itself. You get to pens. It is what it is. But it brings up the conversation that
it goes straight to pens. So there's no extra time.
But it brings up the conversation of like, is this the right format for this first round? Because the players are now talking about it a little bit more. Aaron Long had comments. So did Stefan Fry. Stefan Fry.
Old dudes are saying they don't like extra games. Crazy. Crazy.
Stefan Fry was making the comment that basically, like, if you play, you could beat your opponent 5-0 in the first game and then lose on penalties in the next two and you're out. And that, like, that doesn't feel right. And that Aaron Long was making the point that he thinks it should go back. If it's going to be multiple games, it should go to home and away, so that And go back to aggregate again. So every play is meaningful. Every goal is meaningful. It's just a little bit more on the line than if you're losing 5-0, you're not really going to try.
Do me a favor. The three that we've seen, this three game series, you have the home and away, and then you have the single game elimination. Rank them for me, best to worst. And remember this, the three game series, while you're thinking, the three game series happened last year for the first time, so we've seen it already.
Yes. I gotta say, single game elimination feels the best. So I'll go single game one, home at home second, and then this version as third.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think, look,
the 1, 2, 3 is the amount of games. Also, you rank them in the amount of games. It's hilarious.
The single game elimination easily puts the most intensity at
That's the thing. It's the most exciting, but is it the most fair? You could say a 3-game series is the most fair.
I would say it's mm-hmm. the most fair. But it is,
and it's only one round that's this way. It goes to single game elimination after this.
Is it the most? Is it the most entertaining having a 3-game? No, it is not. It is not. I mean, you're gonna argue you're gonna argue, or anybody's gonna argue that it could be the most entertaining. 100% that is not the case. That the single game
I would say it's more entertaining than Home and Away.
I completely disagree. I think
because then people can park the bus. You can't do that in this.
Sure.
And that's why that 5-0, the counter argument to that is like, because it's not aggregate, you can't just park the bus.
Correct.
You have to win every game or the first two. You have to win 2 of the 3.
Yes. The single game elimination, or at least the home and away, to me, it offers that second game is more exciting than any of the than the first two of the best of three. Like if one team wins and then the other team wins, those games to me are less entertaining than that second game of that, because the aggregate score, and it's like I find myself paying attention to, okay, we need these many goals, away goals, and whatever. And even though it can be a little convoluted, and maybe for the layman or not, maybe new soccer fan, it might be a bit much, but to me, it offers a fair amount of excitement because you see the intensity when a team is trying to at least tie it up to go to extra time.
Well, I think you're also, you hit on why I think MLS is doing this, because if you're going to bring Messi in, you're going to get all of a sudden a bunch of fans that don't know anything about soccer.
Yeah.
Certainly watching because they're like, well, I heard this is the greatest player in the world. I got to watch, right? Yeah. So now all of a sudden, how do you make the sport more palatable to someone who doesn't already know the rules that are happening in Europe and everywhere else? 3-game series. Very easy to understand for an American.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a...
So that's why you do
it. From a
business... And you get more matches.
More matches. From a business perspective, Apple TV is like, just get them all down the field, run around.
Let them burn themselves out.
A little bit more.
Yeah.
Why
don't we hush up on the too many games? All right, Rodri?
Okay. You're being a little loud right now.
Man. You're using your ins and your outside voice inside here.
What do you mean overworked?
No.
Anyway. These conversations are going to continue throughout that first round, but that's what the players are making their voice heard about it. Columbus loses at home
to New York Rebels.
To Rebels, Rebels get that one goal, and they're like, "All right,
lock it up.
We don't need any."
All right, folks. Great seeing you all.
I don't know if you saw Lewis Morgan had that 1v1 with the keeper. Had a great opportunity to ice the game and decided to run it past and go way too far. So he was furious at himself when he didn't score that goal.
I think the fans were also.
But a big win. I think a lot of people did not expect that. And then RSL and Minnesota going to pen. It's just another one. The nil-nil. Going to pens, I'm just looking at the scoreline right now. I'm like, it feels gross. I'm like, this shouldn't be.
I don't agree.
It doesn't feel right. Because the Leagues Cup, when games in Leagues Cup went to pens.
You're going
to
use that as the standard bearer?
I'm just saying that those.
The competition everybody loves?
Those felt like, okay, this is the right, let's just end this game.
Yeah.
No, everybody has whatever feelings about this tournament, whatever. But an MLS playoff game, just going to pens, it doesn't...
It's just this round, though.
Yeah, it is. But it just doesn't offer the same oomph that I'm kind of looking for.
I'm excited for the second legs. It's not legs. The second match day?
Yeah. Yeah. So
I haven't figured out how to talk about this yet.
So we'll see. Again, City Field, Saturday. Be on the lookout for your boys. Anyway, Brian Ford coming up. Let's talk about some Arsenal. Let's talk about some bread.
Some pine, some dulce.
And his new book. Seriously, if you're a fan of food and you're a fan of footy, this is the show for you.
You're welcome. Finally, I get to pick a guest.
So here's our convo with Brian Ford.
Buddy, royalty is in a building.
You know,
that's what I say when we have people who bake bread.
When I say, yo, we got to get this bread,
Bro, I'm not talking about money. I'm talking
you
about
you meant money? Oh, dude, I went out and got my favorite football fan friend and baker.
Exactly. So, and this is something I think is going to be helpful for a lot of people in different ways because this show is very much, I think the foundation of this show, it's almost like a crust of pizza.
Ooh.
Okay. So ooh. Brett.
Hold on. He cooking. Hold on.
So, I mean, you see it in our logo. Uh-huh. So Brett has been an important, almost the third cooligan.
Yeah. Gluten is important to this show.
Okay. My wife is furious about it. Yeah. My nutritionist wife. But I met this guy a couple years ago.
Yeah. At the Yankee Stadium for a New York City FC game.
And ever since then, I learned about his career path and everything he does. And I'm like, this guy makes bread. That's it. And it's like it feels like an old timey, medieval job.
Right.
But no,
but he's doing a hell of a job.
He's doing a hell of a job. So
he's gonna become a blacksmith after this. ladies and gentlemen, keep it going for the one, the only, my friend and everyone's favorite baker, Brian Ford, everybody.
Man, Brian. Wow, I haven't gotten an intro like that in a long, long time, if not ever. Man.
Yeah. Damn. That's because you and I are walking home to our wives. We're like, why didn't you do the things I asked you to?
Man, thank y'all for having me, bro.
Of course, dude.
Wow, it's a pleasure.
So you, I've been seeing your book is coming out soon. You're already a published author. You got a new book coming out called
Pani. A couple bestsellers in that list of books.
Yeah.
Called Pani Dulce. The Latin American baking book, and you are of Honduran descent.
Yeah.
And, this is a great opportunity to not only talk about some bread, but also talk about footy. You're an Arsenal fan. I know that.
Yep.
You
got your coaching license.
You have your coaching license.
I do.
You and your brother?
Just me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And you walked in the studio, we were juggling the ball a little bit and I mean, this is prime Neymar right here, bro.
Oh, yeah. He did a couple around the world and Christian was like, all right.
Sometimes people are a little bit nervous when I toss them the ball. Like, no.
We've had pros in here that weren't doing all that.
I got the techers, man.
Yeah, for real, bro.
Where do we even begin? Let's just start and mention the book so we don't forget it. But Pani Dulce, what's the first pitch for why should we be excited about the book?
When does it come out?
Start with that. First of all, November 12th, Pani Dulce, the Latin American baking book. It is my second book. It covers 33 countries of Latin America, pastries, sourdough, sweets, yeasted breads.
I didn't even know there were 33 countries.
Everything. Well,
crazy.
Including the Caribbean, not including Belize, not including Jamaica, stuff like that. So it's all about colonization. So anyway,
Bro, get into it, dog.
But the fun stuff.
Yeah. it's hard to talk about this book.
What did Emmy's family do?
pretty much.
Only joke.
Pretty much. It's hard to talk about this book without talking about our history, the history of our foodways. But essentially, this is a baking book like no other because we're really trying to celebrate Latin American baking culture and bring it to the forefront. Man.
So this is important, right? You know how much I love and care about food. Mm-hmm. You know how much I know about food and I espouse about food. You know, espouse about food. Words are not my thing. We know that. I just talk for a living. I didn't know until Brian told me because I didn't realize it. You ever see something and it's been in front of you the whole time? We were talking, and Brian's like, yo, I want to make this bread. I want to make that bread. I'm like, oh, so you're making like a Latin bakery? And he goes, nah. He's like, you only think of it as a Latin bakery because America has told you that Eurocentric baking is the only traditional baking. We don't think about the stuff that we've made for generations in Latin America. And I was like, bro, I never think about the stuff that we've been making for generations. Right. I think of it as like it's adjunct or it's like adjacent to baking. No, this is centuries old, some of this stuff.
Yeah, this is, look, if, at the end of the day, when you go to a panaderia here in New York City, right? You go to a bakery.
It was a Latin bakery.
A Latin bakery, right? You might go to a neighborhood like Jackson Heights, let's say. You get a concha there. It's a dollar. Mm-hmm. You eat it and you're like, wow, this is terrible or this is dry. And like, that's the reaction a lot of people have. And so they kind of kick our culture down a little bit. They're like, that's not that good. Like, I prefer to eat a croissant. What you're doing is forgetting that socioeconomically, right? Families that are Hispanic families here are broke, mm-hmm. right? They don't have access to good butter, good flour, expensive labor.
Right, bakeries can't go out and get like the super exclusive ingredients.
And so when you go to a bakery that can do that, it's usually a what's it called?
French bakery
or an Italian bakery. Yeah. Those are the ones where if you made Italian bread with bleached, crappy flour, it'll right. taste terrible. If you made a croissant with margarine, it would taste terrible. So it's really a numbers game. And so getting people to realize that the panaderias are just as excellent as any other bakery. It's just all about remembering where we come from, where we're at as a people, as immigrants. Like, we're not there yet. We don't have that many affluent people who are able to pay $20,000 a month rent here in Manhattan or Brooklyn.
Can you tell you've been looking?
You know what I'm saying?
Like, can you tell you've been looking? Some of this information is wrong.
$20,000 a month in rent. I'll see a new bakery pop up and it's all the rage. You know, it gets pressed and you're like, okay, that's a lot. That's a lot of money. Where are you getting that money from? Ain't no regular chefs out here just got that money laying around. Yeah. So then you have to.
Also, this is bakeries.
This is bakeries, bro.
Bakeries weren't always known as like high margin. This was like a staple in a community.
Yeah, yeah.
It shouldn't be the kind of thing where like, you know, you have the press that some of these bakeries have.
Or even when you walk into some bakeries and it's like the most luxurious place you've ever been in. And I'm like, okay, well, how much is this bread? Yeah.
Am I buying an iPhone?
Yeah.
That's basically like an Apple store.
But you got to trace that hierarchy and think about where the money comes from to open these bakeries. It's all about pitching. When you pitch a European bakery, it's easier to get the funding. For someone to pitch, someone's like, I'll give you $1 million. You can open up. That's cool. When you pitch a Latin American baker, you're like, what is this? I've had Mexican bread and it's terrible. And then you're like, oh, I guess this pitch isn't working.
Yeah.
It's actually
not too different from the way they look at the quality of, a soccer player in Latin America versus a European.
They look at a South American player and they're like, I think this tastes terrible.
Yeah. I'm like, what are you talking about?
could you stop gnawing on my central midfielder?
It's true. But like, you know, even the Copa America versus the Euro, I mean, like the Euro is like so perfectly manicured.
Yeah.
It was very boring this time around, but Copa America, it's like a knife fight. You've seen the memes.
It
truly is. But like, if I was a recruiter, I'd be like, I want those dudes. I want them dudes who are putting it all on the line, not passing sideways for 90 minutes.
Video I just saw of Quaresma when someone threw a switchblade onto the pitch.
Oh my God.
And he picked it up and it was open and the ref was like, whoa. And he goes, and he closed it and hands it back to him. And I was like, yo,
oh boy.
Yo, Quaresma. Let's just say the academy wasn't the only place he learned a few things, huh?
But I just want to say one thing. But if you're listening to this and you're like, whoa, wait, hold on. What is this book? It is a delicious book. You can bake a lot of delicious things in this book. So, there is some historical context, but at the end of the day, there's 150 recipes in there. Breads, pastries, savory bakes.
Hey, yo, flex on your neighbors, bro. They don't eat this bread. They won't know. They'll be like, yo, where'd you learn how to make a media luna?
Yeah, man. Make you a golfiado, man. You'll change somebody's life.
Absolutely, bro.
Someone who has,
by the way, Barnes & Noble, one of the best books of 2024.
That was a big one.
Barnes & Noble. As someone who has never made bread before, if I get the book, how quickly is the learning process to... Well,
yeah, what'll be faster? Christian becoming a baker at your level or me becoming a footballer at your level?
That is a trick question because I'm not trying to offend anybody.
No, go for it. Obviously, it's Christian being a better baker. That's why I asked that way.
I've never seen you touch a ball.
That's for a reason.
I've never seen you how you get down. So yeah. I think at this stage,
you've seen him kill some bread, though.
Big facts.
I think you become a pretty good baker. There's yeasted breads in here that you could learn in 3 hours, like how to make something from start to finish.
Because I love watching
in 3 hours, you still be tying your shoe
100%.
You still be tying up your boots.
I'd be actually on the phone with my wife, like, I don't know, it hurts from my knee to my back. What did I do? I just tied my shoe.
Watching your Instagram because there is something to the I want to get a video one of you just like. The process of making bread in itself seems very therapeutic to you. There's an emotional bond, and whether it's historical, whether it's cultural, while you're doing this, I'm just like, man, I don't know anybody that cares more about bread than
therapy.
This man.
this is
he is in his element.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys know, being in the media, it's like behind the scenes. It becomes a job. It becomes something you have to kind of. There's a lot that goes into this production of making books and shows. So I think what I've been craving is that community-based baking, which like I don't like, I would love to have a little bakery somewhere in a little village where I'm just baking 100 loaves and people are coming to pick them up. Like that feeling that's my ultimate goal, to get that feeling. Right now it's about trying to reach as many people as I can to educate and teach the type of baking I enjoy. But yeah, I mean, it's become this book took 4 or 5 years, you know, to kind of go from conceptualization to print, and there's a lot that goes in, you know, the photo shoot, the traveling, the testing, the copy edits, all the errors, and you know, it's therapeutic is not the word that describes the reality of the process, is what I'm saying.
But the baking but part, the baking, the getting your hands on some dough.
Anytime I have a chance to shape some loaves and actually pull things out the oven, those moments are priceless.
Shape some loaves. I'm gonna use that. I don't know how, but I'm like, I need to go shape some.
We gotta shape some loaves, bro. We gotta make some Nixta bagels or something.
Let's go. These Nixta bagels are popping, by the way. I gotta swing by the crib.
You got to.
Let's tell the story of how you and I met. We were introduced by a mutual friend. A friend of mine, shouts to Sirhan, if you're watching or listening. He goes, yo, I know this guy. He bakes a bunch of bread. He makes pizzas in his backyard. He's in Queens. He's also a massive Arsenal fan. Do you want to know him? And I said, oh, quick text him.
Yeah.
Send me a name and address.
I'm swiping right. Very quickly.
Yeah, man.
Tell him I'm down. DTF, down to food. So we just started texting about Arsenal,
bro. Yeah, and there was a match coming up on like a Saturday, and I was doing some pizza with Sirhan the other day, and I had some dough in the fridge that I knew it was fire. I was like, yo, pull up. I'll throw something in the oven.
This man texts me, come to my crib, we'll watch Arsenal, and I'll bake you some pizzas.
Yes, bro,
all you heard was tire screeching. I was like, I said to my wife, I said, I don't know if I'm coming back.
You told your wife, I think I might have found a new partner.
Yo.
Because you do not talk to me like this.
Yeah, why don't you talk to me like this?
Yeah.
So I pulled up. I said, yeah, I don't show up places empty-handed. I hate that. So I went and got Taylor ham. It's like this ultra-processed ham that's famous in New Jersey, and I said, bro, I know a place near me that has it. They only put it in sandwiches, so I said, yo, let me get like a couple slices of tail ham, and they're like, on a roll? And I go, no, by itself. And they were like, I don't know how to charge that. I'm like, get your manager, I gotta get to this guy's house. So I pull up, we made a bunch of pizzas. You got to try Taylor ham for the first time.
Yeah.
And we just ate a bunch of pizzas that he made in his uni. Shouts to uni. And we watched Arsenal. And I was like, from that point on, I'm like, yo, we're homies.
Yeah.
Like, I knew it was friends immediately.
Yeah, 100%. That was really dope, man. And like, you know, when I feeding people, especially for the first, like when I meet you for the first time and I'm feeding you, I feel like that's the ultimate way I'll know if we'll bond. Because somebody feeding me is the way that I know we'll bond. Here's the thing. We're talking about, I knew a little bit about you and you know, at the time, so I was like, yeah, he's like, you know, he's like, he knows food, he loves pizza, you know. So I figured, you know, you're from this area and you probably have strong opinions about like pizza and sauce. But
what are your thoughts on that, Christian?
I open my fridge and I grab just some jarred sauce.
He did pull up with some bodega red sauce.
And then I opened up some bag of like Kraft shredded cheese. And when you accepted that in your heart, I was like, oh, he's real. Because that's not a reflection of my expertise. That's just what I got in my fridge. I was like, yo, like, I'm going to make some. Didn't they put a fried egg on it or something?
Yeah,
I
don't know, we ended up putting a fried egg on one.
We just threw stuff on the dough and we crushed it and watched the game.
We were having
a
good time.
Yeah, I was like, this
is
the dude.
But he did pull out a ragu.
It was a ragu adjacent.
Yeah,
it was like
Food Wishes version.
Like Kirkland Signature or something like that.
I was like, I know this dude ain't.
Yes,
but then he pulled out the dough, and the dough was as soon as he opened it, actually, I could smell the fermentation.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, we're back in.
And I pulled up this photo because there's something.
This is like, we need to blur this in some states. This is pure sex, bro.
There's something about this photo that I can't even exactly explain. As somebody who's not really, obsessed with the details around food, I like the way the food tastes. I'll go to the nice restaurants and, you know, I'm not leaving a review. I'm not that type of person. But I looked at this photo and there's clearly an art to this. This is like an image. And we're looking, if you're listening only, we're looking at
the cross section of a croissant.
Yeah. And it looks like a honeycomb.
Yeah.
I mean, this is
so that is the lamination of all those layers being spun. There's butter in between each of those layers. Laminating dough is pressing a layer of butter between two croissants.
This was, it was at Little Flower and the oven was at the wrong temperature at the beginning of the bake. So if you look in the middle, you can see a little bit of thickness in the honeycomb compared to the outside. So I had to adjust the temperature to actually get a proper bake.
It's You see what I'm saying?
I can literally see. I was like, I know this bake. I remember exactly what happened during this bake. But yeah, that's a triple fold, man. That's three single folds. You know, 48 hours. You know what I'm saying? Fridge proof, then oven.
How much of that did you understand?
I mean, I heard fridge.
That's like when my wife hears me say they're doing a 3-4-3. And she's like, sure, yeah. Sure, whatever. Like, just keep yelling at the billionaires playing soccer.
It's not like I'm listening to Pep at a halftime talk.
Yeah. Pretty much.
But that's when people say, like, how do you know so much about pizza? I'm like, if you've ever met people who actually work with bread for a living, they can literally look at something and know everything about it. That was magical.
So yeah, we're looking at Instagram.
This is my favorite type of croissant, by the way.
Go through all 10 of these.
A little extra crispy on the bottom. That is my favorite type of croissant.
This is a pop-up I did in Prospect Lefferts Gardens where I was doing some rustic sourdough breads, whole grain with regionally milled flour. I was also doing some chocolate Mesoamerican conchas that day. No, semitas that day. But this is the first time I cooked in the Uni Cotamax 2.
Beautiful leoparding, by the way.
Nice leoparding. This is a 72-hour sourdough pizza.
The right amount of sauce and cheese ratio here.
That's San Marzano from my garden, actually.
Yeah. By the way, if you're listening to this, just go and watch it.
Yeah, watch it on YouTube.
These are golfeados.
Okay, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
If you give me a massive bowl of hot coffee, I'm eating every one of these and dipping it in there.
Yeah.
What's a golfeado? Golfeado
is a Venezuelan, I call it a sweet and sticky bun. It's like salty and sweet. It's got piloncillo syrup, which is, piloncillo is like those blocks, those brown blocks
it's
of
like
sugar.
It's almost like a caramelized demerara sugar that.
Correct. It's unrefined cane sugar that's pressed into molds. They used to do that to transport it more easily back in the day, but it kind of stuck and it's cheap. It's delicious. And it's got fresh cheese and cotija cheese on top. It's also laminated. Those are phenomenal. Those are the number one. If you got Pani Dulce, the book, make the golfeados.
Trust me when I tell you, just go buy this book and make this. Whoever is the loved one is no longer going to be looking for someone else.
I saw them. I'm like, these look like fancy Cinnabons.
Yeah. I love them. That's more rustic sourdough, regional. You know what I'm saying? Just the basics. Some focaccia.
Look at the light and airiness of that focaccia.
That one was real. That was actually in the I got the gloves on. I'm in the commissary kitchen in Queens. That I don't even want to think about that.
Talk to me about a birote, bro.
Birotes. So if you go to Guadalajara and Mexico, also in Pani Dulce, the recipe. This is that sourdough. A birote is essentially what a baguette used to be when the colonizers pulled up. But the atmosphere in Guadalajara is so different at elevation, and there's humidity and the flour and everything like that. Some have beer in it. Some have egg in it. It's basically like a Mexican style long baguette. Rustic bread. Yeah, exactly.
A little softer on the inside, so closer to like a sandwich bread.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love the modernization of the way we talk about how the colonizers pulled up as if we asked them to. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like they pulled up. They wanted to see yo, what's good?
I was like, yo, you got bread on there? No, put the guns down.
Talk to us about
bread. That's my wife and family.
I don't want your blankets.
Oh my God. Why is my chest hurt all of a sudden?
Anyway.
Oh my Lord. Yeah.
No. Tony Hinchcliffe would hate this podcast.
If you read the book, I don't take it easy on
you.
That was a semita with Mesoamerican chocolate. These are some cinnamon rolls, simple cinnamon rolls.
This is before it's baked, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, because if it was after it's baked, it'd be a crime. That's the sweet baby Nixa bagel. That's nixtamalized corn, aka masa, infused into a sourdough bagel.
I've never even heard of this.
Remember we were talking about what makes a tortilla good? You got to nixtamalize the corn. He's put that in the bagels.
In the sourdough bagel. It's delicious. It's hoja santa.
There's like a plant on that.
That's the hoja santa leaf, which is a common
I don't
herb.
Want people to think that's like mold or anything. That's a leaf. That's a leaf baked onto the edge.
It's just a concept I'm playing around with.
Can you zoom in, by the way, just above the leaf? Can you zoom in a little more? Is that possible?
No, this is.
All right, see the space between the seeds and the leaf. Do you see those little dots?
Yeah.
That's micro blisters.
Yeah, it is.
That's
man.
What lets you know dough has been aged properly.
I love how you know that, because that is exactly what that means.
I mean, of course it is.
It means you got the cold fermentation.
Yes.
These are at least 3 days in the fridge or 2 days in the fridge.
When you see that on a bagel, you're eating a real bagel.
Yeah. 100%.
If you don't see those micro blisters, you ain't eating a real bagel.
You're eating
emergency dough.
So, okay. Brian, so how did you get to this and also have your coaching license?
Yeah, where did that come from?
That was a lot to unpack, man, but I'll try to keep it. So I played at a pretty high level when I was growing up in Louisiana. I did
Are you from near New Orleans?
I'm from New Orleans. I played in the Junior Olympics, five-a-side. Whoa. I did.
Just five-a-side.
I did select super clubs, played like Dallas Solar, Chicago Magic. I played super clubs when all the college scouts pulled up and I banged my knee, dude. I missed the whole tournament.
You sound like a Jamaican uncle. No, I would have gone pro.
I had a few offers to play in college, but it just family and all this kind of thing. And I was like, I don't want to go away from my house. So I went to college, became an accountant, but I started coaching on the side. I still love balling, bro. Like I love to ball. Started coaching where I used to play, and that turned into the coaches. They were like, yo, you're kind of good. Like I was like, okay, I did that. The F license you could do online. You could do that right now. Mm-hmm. The E license, I think you can do it online now, but back in the day you had to go. And then the D license I ended up doing in Miami. When I moved to Miami, I started coaching for a club and playing for like Miami-Dade FC or something. Like whatever. Like I would train with those teams. I was trying to get on to where Nesta was coaching.
Miami FC.
Tore my Achilles at 26. And I was like, this whole thing is done.
Yeah.
So, but while I was coaching and getting my licenses, I was also cooking and baking the whole time. So it was kind of like, I would coach the kids and I would bring bread to the parents. Literally, like I would show up to practice with bread and croissants and all this stuff for the parents.
I don't have a kid, but my kid could be coached by you. And I'm just sitting there eating a baguette. Yeah. I'm like, this is incredible.
You're supposed to bring orange slices.
I'm like, this guy's good. He's a good coach.
I trust him with my children. I was bringing chocolate croissant to halftime. I was like, these kids don't eat oranges, bro. Let's not even pretend they do. So when I quit accounting and moved to Miami, it was like, all right, I'm either gonna make it big playing soccer, I'm open a bakery. So I was doing them both at the same time. And I was kind of just like, bro, I was just hustling. Once I tore the Achilles, that was kind of a wrap on my ability to move much. And the sourdough just like dominated, man. The blog went up, the books started happening and all that kind of thing. So I want to get
this. Pre-pandemic?
This is pre-pandemic. Yeah. Well, this is like 2015.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
This is a while ago. 2015, 2016 is when I really started ramping up.
Oh, that's right. You said Nesta.
Launched my blog in like 2017. And that's when like some account called Breadmasters reposted this Pan de Coco. And that just set everything in motion to where I was like, yo, like there's a market. There's a demand for sourdough bread made in a different way. And I just kind of ran with it, bro, and started writing about it.
How did you feel during the pandemic when sourdough, you must have been ahead of the curve. Must have been coming.
He was like, none of these people are doing it right.
it was almost like it was a perfect storm scenario for my work. And it was bittersweet because people were dying and it was, you know, we were in the middle of this pandemic. Yeah, yeah. And I was in Miami in Florida. So it was like, we were like 6 months late to like caring. I cared.
They're like, was like, everyone inside in New York?
Literally, no, like nothing stopped happening where I was living. But, in terms of the book, I mean, it was already planned to publish in 2020. That was not like it's COVID, let's rush the book out. It was just, and then things set in motion and, you know, I sold a lot of books. I mean, but at the same time, it was strange because there was a lot going on in the world. So it was hard to maneuver and travel. And, people got a lot of exposure to my work because they started baking more bread at home. So, you know, I'm thankful for the supporters that I gained during that time. But like I said, bittersweet. It's been a strange 4 years. No, I mean, so this time around, I'm like, fucking buy the book, bro.
No guilt, there's no extra.
It's just like, hey, here's the next one.
Yeah. As far as getting your coaching badges and getting the B license. I mean, I know
D.
I thought you said B.
I thought you got to B.
Me too.
I'm not gonna lie. I was like, man, they're really impressed. I got that D. I mean, like, you know,
up for the course. That's more than either one of us have done.
But we talk about youth soccer in this country a lot, and we all want the next Messi and the next Neymar, and this country is so big, and why can't we develop a player like that? As far as the expertise and the things that you learned in just getting that license and coaching kids and things like that, what is, if you had to answer that question of like, why don't we develop mm-hmm. Messi's and why don't mm-hmm. we develop exactly Neymar's, why do you think that is?
First of all, I'm sure you guys have answers to this too. I'll give you my like triple threat answer to this. Obviously, the collegiate system is a disaster. I think that's a disaster because, you know, you're 21 years old. when you get out of it, which I think is just it's just too late to have to not be in a pro team yet. But the biggest thing is there's too many Pep Guardiolas that are parents to 7 year olds.
Yeah,
and it's a pay to play. All right, so I was very very good at soccer, right? And the only way for me to play on the best teams was to pay a few thousand bucks a half season. It's expensive to play select here, very. Man. Like, you know, if you went to Brazil, if you're good, they're going to find a way to get you on the best team to represent the country one day. But if you're good in the States and you ain't got the cheddar to play on the best teams, you ain't really going to. And then ODP. ODP was an extra fee on top of your select team. So I'm like, I was good at U16, U15, U17. Homeboys that had money that weren't that good, they was on ODP though. And then once you're on ODP, you're getting into regional.
Everyone sees da, 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 da.
So I was like, my parents can afford that. So I was kind of dead in the water. But the Pep Guardiolas, man, I coach 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 year olds. I've coached all in that bracket. And because you have to pay to play, there's a lot of entitlement that parents have. And so the parents on the sideline.
I'm paying your salary.
Let me tell you something about these parents, bro. They are ruining everything about how the kids are developing, because A, while the kid's playing, they know their parents is gonna, you know.
The drive home.
Fight for, no, it's not even that. It's more like they know their parent is going to take care of things for them. Oh, I'm not playing? My dad, literally, they come on the side, hey, why isn't my kid in? In the middle of a game, I'm like, dude, they're all playing the same amount of minutes, man. Like, just go enjoy your son playing and stop making this energy that, like, the kid's like, oh, I deserve to play. I need, you know, so instead of letting the kids play, I think there's too much of this micromanagement from parents because they pay and their opinions are way too valuable in a lot of these clubs, you know, and just I think that and that's what I've experienced in New Orleans and Miami. Now, these are not the especially when I was coaching, the biggest like soccer cities. Don't get me wrong. You know, I know places in Texas and California and New York have different infrastructure and different setups with how youth are. But I think kids just need to play until they're about 12, 13. I mean, you don't need to teach tactics to a 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, man. You really just literally need to let them have fun.
Right.
Let them play. Just let them. You don't need to teach them how to play out the back. That's what we were doing in the D license, I think, is for 10, 11, 12s. And we're doing, you know, everything has to go out the back when you're doing the exam to get the license. I'm like, that's fine. Okay, cool. Go apply this to 11-year-olds. I mean, some of them, yes, can do it. But it's just let them play the game so they can get real experience. They can mess up right now. You're 11. You can mess up on the field. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And I think that's where the U.S. gets caught. Then, you know, ODP college, like, we don't foster a culture of where fun and the sport itself is what dominates over, like, you know, entitlement or like we have, you know, I have to play, I have to win, and all that. Kind
and of you, things. I guess, you figure the parents, their opinions are valuable because,
well, they're the donor.
Yeah,
the
money. Exactly. How are you going to run this club? You're not, so you have to sort of
because everything's got to be for profit.
Yeah. So it's just it's disappointing, and we've heard similar things before. I play at a Sunday league in Brooklyn Bridge Park, and then after we're done, the kids play in some league or some tournament or something like that, and I see the parents on the sideline, and I remember back to I forgot who was talking about this, but they were in French youth football. They have like a rule where the parents can't say anything. Like literally there has to be complete, like not necessarily silence, but you can't be you can't be like, pass it, you can't say anything. And then the first thing I see.
I wish my nephew's league did that. It was just a bunch of people yelling, kick it.
Yeah.
It's like, they don't even have the ball. It's halftime. What are you yelling?
I'm like, I'm watching the parents, and the parents are just like, I saw two dads like mad at their kids for like messing up, like, oh, get the ball, pass it. Yeah. Or I'm just like, bro, relax.
Right. Yeah. I literally had parents come to me and give me formations and tell me where kids should play for a U9 game.
Bro.
Hilarious.
That's what I'm talking about, okay?
this U9 kid is a perfect
game. I've literally had parents come with a whole tactical plan.
And, you see, and Billy, that's the regista, okay? Right. We're gonna pull him back. Go sweeper? How you wanna go? You wanna go old school?
Yeah, there's a lot of grown men that wanna make people feel stupid about something like U9 tactics. Yeah. I'm just sitting there, I'm like, it's like, hey man, like, I know tactical analysis in 11v11 full on soccer. I'm not dumb.
Yeah.
They're eight.
Yeah.
They're eight.
The most important thing at that age is to like not have that cloud of kids following the ball. That's the most important thing.
The cloud of kids happens regardless until you get to like 11, 12. Elite 10s can definitely, spatial awareness happen. So I started a master's program at FIU, Florida International.
Okay, all right. I've
never felt less accomplished.
This is for exercise physiology.
Definitely feel worse now.
I only did a semester because I was like paying out of pocket. I was like, what am I doing? But I took like exercise physiology for youth, and they talk about spatial awareness a lot. Like scientifically, there is no spatial awareness at a certain point. Like you just don't even bother dealing with it.
Yeah.
They'll learn it at a certain point, and then you can start to address it. So that's another common thing I see coaches at U5, U6, U7, U8, and they're just like, they're space. And I'm like, they can't.
Their brain don't work that way.
They're thinking Buzz Lightyear.
Like, infinity and beyond, bro. More of that.
Incredible, man. Yeah, it's
so
nice.
So wait, hold on. If I could grant you a wish, and it was you were the manager for the next 20 years of Arsenal.
Oof.
Okay, and you win a couple trebles in that, or you have an array of Latin bakeries that change the world's opinion on Latin baking. Which one would you choose?
Jesus.
Dude, I cannot believe you just asked me that. I think it's a no-brainer. I would be the manager of Arsenal that won all the titles. What are you talking about?
Bro, you know what I love about that? What answer you gave, I'm your friend. I get to be a part of either one of those. It was really a win-win for me.
Because like that could never, ever happen versus like I still have time to actually make those bakeries one day, but I will never be the manager.
You don't know that, bro.
Right?
Look at where you are now. If you start now,
if I take
bro, you rupture another Achilles, you might be the manager. Look how much good happens.
You'll have me at home.
Yeah. Bro. Look how much good happens when your leg destroys your future.
Man. No. I mean, that's like, what a superpower.
Yeah.
All you got to do is injure yourself greatly.
And all of a sudden, a new door opens.
Yes. Successful.
That is God opening another door for you.
It's true.
I mean, my last question. Are Arsenal, can they do it? Can they win the league this year?
Yeah, of course, man. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a, you know, like they say, it's 11v11, unless it's Arsenal.
It'll be 10v11.
I don't see why we won't be able to do it. I mean, this is 9 games in, man. I mean, we ain't even, you know, last year during the Christmas break, we dropped. We lost to like West Ham and some other you know, there was a couple
Villa,
games last year.
Yeah.
You know,
well, that was a little bit later.
Then Villa, I remember Villa, I was at the airport. I was like, bro, are you serious?
So he's texting me. He's like, I'm on the Boingo Wi-Fi right now.
Like there was like, we've lost one game. So it's like, you know, there's obviously room to still win the title. Yep. I think it really depends on if Mwaneri can get in a little bit more and just see what happens. If Odegaard comes back.
Did you see the Carabao Cup match?
I just watched it last night. Yeah. Bro, yesterday, bro.
I thought about this. Mwaneri's 17 years old.
Dude, it's nuts.
If he was American, maybe right now it's a little bit different. But if you go back like 6 years ago, if he was American, he'd still be in a U18 academy.
Yeah.
Not even touching first team.
He wouldn't. That exactly right there is what, you know. Maybe the U.S. is never going to be destined to be that good at soccer. Maybe this is just what we are. I think that's another thing. Like, as Americans, I like to just be like, yo, like, this is just what we are. Why do we think at some point we're going to break the mold and be the best? Like,
okay. We're great at everything, but we change the rules. Y'all just lucky you don't have oil, bro. All right.
Dumb, bro. Yeah,
we're 100% winning the league this year.
Okay, wow. 100%.
All right. 100%. 100%.
Wow. How about this? If you do it, you got to come bake bread for us.
I'll bake bread. Wait, if we win, I have to work?
Yeah.
Why? I'm the one making the prediction.
I'll bake bread for you.
Let's go. He's from Pani Dulce.
From Pani Dulce.
Yeah. He's an Everton fan, by the way.
No, okay. I know he is. Yeah. I just wasn't going to say nothing. I was like, what is there to say?
Kind of like what Sean Dyche does at halftime.
All right. Brian, this is it's been super dope, man. Thank you so much.
Pick up the book, guys. Pani Dulce.
Go pick up Pani Dulce.
Pan Pani Dolce.
Pani Dolce.
Okay.
For everyone who is available on November 12th. You can pre-order the book right now. So, can they pre-order it pretty much anywhere? Or
find an independent bookstore wherever you are. Find your independent local bookstore. Support businesses. Support black businesses. Support whatever business you want to support before you hit the big ones. You know what I'm saying? But you can go on my site and pick and choose from where you want to order from.
Your website is?
Artisanbrian.com.
Artisanbrian.com.
B-R-Y-A-N.
Yes.
Artisan, B-R-Y-A-N.
Not white Brian.
Yeah. Brian,
okay. Like Brian, like
he's taking up that SEO, bro.
Brian.
Brian. Okay, you know what? Let's just wrap up here with this.
Let's do it.
We did this a couple weeks ago during Hispanic Heritage Month, the Yo Sabo game, and now that we have another Latino born in the United States to be able to do this, let's just do it. We'll each pick a card.
Is it intentionally Yo Sabo? Like,
yeah.
It
was supposed to be. It's because a lot of Latinos don't know.
Gotcha.
All right. So you're gonna read the card for the rest of the group.
So you're gonna quiz us.
Yeah.
Oh,
I'll go first. I'll go first, and then you guys can.
Yeah.
Quiz,
so we'll quiz the other two. So I'll go first. It's these green cards, and let's see how this goes. All right. This is a fun one. ¿Cómo se dice a drinking straw?
Oh,
Bahia.
Yeah, it's gonna be different. We have a t-shirt about this, actually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because for me, it's absorbente.
And for me, it's sorbeto. I'm Dominican. So, or calimete, as Dominicans also say. But this has the Mexican version, which is?
Bahia.
No.
No.
What?
Popote.
Popote. Oh,
yeah, which is a word you don't want to say in Cuban slang.
No.
Yeah.
All right. So, Alexis.
That's hilarious that's the one you grab. We have, what do you call popcorn in Honduran?
And
Nothing.
We say rosita de maíz.
I don't popcorn.
Okay.
Popcorn. Popcorn.
Okay. All right. I have to do it so that he can't see either.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, this is prueba time. I got the wrong one.
Grab a green one.
This is a green one.
Right here. Yeah. Those bottom ones are green.
That was a test.
All right. Oh, this is so easy, bro. ¿Cómo se dice dinner?
Cena.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Come on.
That was a little too easy.
All right. Well, I'll just grab one. Grab that one up there from up top.
Grab off the top.
And quiz us. Let's see what.
Oh, man. I'm glad I didn't. Oh, no. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
¿Cómo se dice flip?
Ooh.
But you do know this word. It's not as hard as you think.
Okay.
Viral?
What did you say?
Viral.
Viral. No. I guess that could work.
That could work.
I would say... Voltear?
Yeah, that's it.
Voltear.
I did not know that word.
When I saw flip, I was like, damn, that's not the word.
I did not know the word. I feel like
Voltear.
I feel like it's more like turnover.
Yeah, that's what I would.
Versus like flip, but I don't know.
All right.
Who am I to even have an opinion about?
Oh, here we go.
Oh, wait, you still go.
Yeah, because mine was trash.
All right, go for it.
¿Cómo se dice challenge?
Oh, but you did this already. Didn't we do this one?
Yeah.
I literally...
Oh, yeah, I remember what it was.
No, hold on. No, it's like say it because I...
This is the bilingual shit. This kills us because you know it.
It's desafío.
Desafío.
Yep.
Yeah, all right.
This is ridiculous.
You know it.
So crazy.
You know it.
You know what it is? Because like growing up, my parents spoke only Spanish. And so, like, when I hear everything, I know what everything means. Yeah, but when I am on the spot, I'm like, that's
what it is, bro.
My mother told me the secret. She said she learned English better when she started thinking in English.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. when I talk to someone in Spanish, I start forgetting words. I start to think in Spanish.
Yeah.
As opposed to trying to translate everything.
No, it does. Living in Miami helped me, though. It was ridiculous how much Spanish I spoke in Miami.
You didn't pick up any Cuban accent? Nothing?
I was not really where I lived was more South Americans.
Oh, okay.
Not I didn't live in Hialeah or anything like that.
Yeah. Gallocho.
I did get my dog from Hialeah though.
That's well, a lot of stuff happens in Hialeah.
Brian,
what'd you get, a pit bull?
She's great.
Again, everybody, go follow @artisanbrian on Instagram and go pick up the book. Brian Luce, Brian Ford, bro. Thank you so much.
Appreciate
for joining
y'all. Thank y'all so much. This was absolutely incredible. Thank you so much, y'all.
That.
Shout out to Brian Ford.
What a gem, huh?
Absolutely crushing it. Just I learned a lot, and I'm gonna get the book. We're getting it at the book.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm gonna try this out. I'm gonna try.
You know what? I think we should bake for each other and bring it in.
That's right. And then
whoever's here, Carter, Emmy.
We have, and you and I have to cross, interlock hands and feed each other the bread. Yeah. So all right, well, we got a
nice. Come to me playing in the background.
Okay. We're going to do this with bread, not wine. Anyway. Yeah.
Why is the studio covered in white silk?
go pre-order the book or go pick it up if you're listening to this a little later. But November 12th, Pani Dulce, go check it out. All right. A couple of things before we wrap up. U.S. Women's National Team, international break. They played a couple matches.
Two matches against Iceland, one against Argentina.
Exactly. And Argentina, kind of known to be a just underfunded, outfit. Yeah,
the women don't get nearly as much support as the men's.
It's kind of wild how sort of behind they are with when it's like the men's team is winning World Cups and then the women's team, they're like, we got a women's team.
Yeah,
they're not.
Can we borrow the bus to get to this game?
But so obviously you're expecting the U.S. to dominate in this game, but I didn't expect them to dominate in this way because Naomi Girma. Getting her first goal.
Was she defensive player of the year? If not, she should be.
She should be.
She's basically the women's game like William Saliba.
Pretty
young, much. Young, stout defender, not calm, placid.
Exactly. And dominant. We saw her at the
Olympics. Super dominant.
But gets her first goal for the U.S.
First two, no?
That's what I'm saying. One would have been perfectly fine.
What you doing up there, girl?
There was a lot of I'm not familiar with your game. I didn't know she had this in the locker. So she gets a broken up play.
Yeah.
And she ends up heading the ball in. But then the second goal was like a proper like, get me in the box.
You know how every defender tells you, oh, when I started in youth, I was a forward or a midfielder. They made me go back because somebody was injured. Bro, this might be true with her, bro.
So this was great to see. And you just see how happy she is. And
this
the Sally smile.
Right here, this is amazing. What a gem of a human being.
This is so adorable. She's just, I'm not even supposed to be here today. And for her to get the two goals is out. And you saw on Instagram as well, all the other, all her teammates on the national team were tagging her, posting about it. Everybody was just so happy for her. Because it's like sort of.
This seems like the kind of person you want to be excited for.
Yeah, because this is something throughout the U.S. Women's National Team history that we sort of accept that some players are just really never going to get an opportunity to score because that is not what they're asked to do.
Right.
But Ali Krieger, I think, has maybe 2-3 goals in her career.
Probably on corners.
You know, when Becky Sauerbrunn scored.
Losing
their mind. So this is, I think, a testament to, and this game in particular, where Emma Hayes is, I believe she started three players got their first caps.
Yeah, Emma Sears.
Mandy Haught. And I forgot.
Formerly Mandy McGlynn, who played at Gotham.
Yeah,
I think she's at Utah now.
And so she also
baked sourdough bread on her Instagram.
Emma Hayes or?
No, Mandy Haught.
Mandy Haught, okay.
We're tying it all together, all right. Bro.
So Emma Hayes clearly experimenting a lot more. And I think one of the experimental tactics were, Naomi, let's see what you got. You go up there.
I've seen this clip posted a couple times. I think it's Neil Warnock in England talked about how his wife had a dream that the center back was the forward and scored two goals. So the next match he did it. He made his center back and they needed to get promoted or something. It was like a cup competition and he scored two goals. He did it.
Love that.
Bro, Naomi Girma, Emma Hayes must have had a dream.
She had a vision.
Or Neil Warnock's wife called her and said, yo, it's worked in the past.
So great to see. And it looked like this window, even though in one of the games against Iceland, the U.S. were down. But they ended up
1-0. They ended up
figuring everything out. So great to see. So shout out to Naomi Girma. Next up. Ballon d'Or, Vinny Jr., there was some drama, right? We were talking about it on the last episode. Raju was going to win, whatever. I'm not a big fan. The ceremony itself was weird, awkward, more than usual.
I hate the term, but it was cringy.
It was just odd. And it's just more than anything, it's not even like, it doesn't, I'm not watching it like, this should be better. Cause I
it's funny, cause that's what I was yelling the whole time. I'm like, why is it like this?
With sporting award shows, it's just like, you already won. You won the World Cup.
Yeah.
That was the celebration. Now we're celebrating your celebration of your success. It's just a very odd thing.
I get it. It's a little inception-y.
So I'm not a huge fan of just having them in general, but it is what it is.
But that's team sports. Now it's time for the individual accolades.
Yes. Yeah. And so Vinicius Jr. obviously did not attend. Nobody from Real Madrid attended. I saw Nico on Morning Foot. He was really kind of adamant about like how classless it was.
Yeah, I shut my brain off during that. But yeah, he seemed to.
But the interesting detail I found about like why Vinicius was so upset, and he tweeted sort of implying that what he thinks the reason he didn't win, he was sort of implying, he didn't heavy-handedly do it, but just implying like maybe racism is involved here at the suggestion. That's what he thinks. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of the voters.
Do you know the last black player to win?
We were talking about this.
Ronaldinho.
Yeah, we were talking about this. So I had seen some of the voters make comments because now looking all this up, the voters from the top 100 ranked FIFA nations get a vote. And
it's very out in the open who they vote for as well.
Yes, and they talk about it. And a few of the voters were like that they appreciated that Rodri, because essentially one of the factors is like...
Was white. Imagine. There's just like, something about his skin tone.
The whiteness, it really took it over the top.
I tried to vote, but my European mind wouldn't allow me.
A lot of the voters were basically... Because one of the factors of the voting is like sort of character. And they appreciated Rodri's character. And so one of the voters said that he doesn't have social media and that he just sort of carries himself.
It's got nothing to do with how you are on the pitch, though.
It does, but
you got no social media.
It is one of the factors of how they choose who they think would get the ball in the door. Just like who they are as a person, which so I understand it. And when it comes to not having social media at all versus a guy who maybe is vocal or maybe even an activist or the, you know, defending himself over, you know, racist attacks and stuff like that. I'm like, it's a weird thing to sort of bring up versus, you know, not having social media as like a...
It sounds like you're finding a reason to not vote for the guy.
Yeah, it's like, this is why he's a classier person. He doesn't think social media or whatever. Anyway. But the one of the interesting factors that I had heard, and I don't know how accurate it is, but I saw it being reported by a couple of different people. But I had seen this tweet that got viral, and this is from Luis Mazariegos, who is a journalist.
I've heard about this as well, by the way.
Yeah, and it says Nike had specially designed Vinicius Ballon d'Or boots to unveil today in an event in Madrid. Real Madrid TV had 5 hours of programming to air about his win. Vinny himself was going to have a party and hand out Rolexes. He was telling Gavi of Barcelona, I assume, right? To watch him collect the award on Monday.
He was telling him, he's like, you're winning today. I'm winning the award on Monday.
Yeah. Dude. So this is...
But Nike wouldn't do this thinking, oh, maybe he went... You know, you've been told you're winning.
Because we saw the reports that, a month ago, that Vinicius was told that he was going to win. I don't know by whom, but that's what, you know, so that definitely sets something in your mind.
Roger said, stop the count.
So I don't know why he was told that, who told him that, when it's clearly, you know, it is a democratic process. People are voting. Mm-hmm. Who's the
governing body of Ballon d'Or now?
It's the French football. It's a French award. I don't know.
I say storm their capital.
We've seen how that worked out in the past. So.
I think that seems like a very reasonable thing. I don't know what you're talking about.
Just storm the Ballon d'Or offices.
Come on, Real Madrid fans. It's okay. Ridiculous. The part that sucks is Rodri had an incredible year and also deserves to win. I couldn't be mad at him.
Yeah.
Carvajal also winning, I wouldn't be mad at. It just stinks that this goes down this way for Vinny. But I like what Vinny tweeted, which is, I'll do it 10 times and I'll prove to them that I have to. So yeah. Good for you, dude.
Yeah, so
I'm pulling for you, man. I think you should have won it.
A lot of drama. Yeah, a lot of people were upset about it. And then let's just give our thoughts real quick. Manchester United, they finally have a new manager.
Yeah, Ruben Amorim.
Are you excited about it? You think this is going to work out?
I'm excited to see what the 3-4-3 looks like with this group of players. Mm-hmm. Casemiro all of a sudden is a golazo machine.
Bro, that goal was crazy.
Incredible. I'm excited to see something new. I don't necessarily want Manchester United to win all the trophies, and I don't need all that. But where, you know, when we fell in love with this sport, Manchester United were like important in the world. Their fans were like, "We're the biggest club in the world," and it's like, "Are you?"
Yeah, I mean, are
you? You were.
It would be possibly. Like, it would be like Real Madrid or Barcelona, like struggling in 14th, 15th.
Well, Barcelona kind of almost did, but now, you know, they found a way through pulling a lot of levers.
But not, you know, year after year.
No. And dude, how do you finish a season with a negative goal differential for the first time in 34 years?
Yeah,
that's not the standard of Manchester United. And we talk about all the time about, you know, MLS loves parity, and I think some of these European leagues don't want that. And when you look at it, they're actually right. Having one or a few super clubs means that you have a villain. The rest of the league now has a villain to try to topple. And when they come to your city, the ticket prices go crazy, or maybe the stadium has a better atmosphere. It's like it's like a traveling circus. You almost have to go see the team. If everyone's playing the same, you don't really get that. And I think that's Manchester United used to be one of those clubs. You know what I mean? Used to be the club that you would like, we got to go to the stadium. I can't wait to see whatever Wenger or whoever you were rooting for at that time take this guy down, you know?
And now
you don't have that.
When we went to Old Trafford and we saw, you know, United against Arsenal, even walking in there, I'm like, all right, yo, this feels
the ghost.
There's something here, you know, there's something legendary. There's something monumental just walking into that building.
Yeah. You could feel it shower. Well, no, we were standing under the drip. We were standing under the leak.
Yeah, it was raining.
But then if you move over.
But no, this is, Amorim has to take this club to, like, obviously just being mediocre would be best. But he has to take him into the future. And Eric Ten Hag could not do that.
Hopefully he's given more time. Hopefully he's good with the media, because Eric Ten Hag was absolutely terrible with the media.
Wow.
You can't be so combative in England.
He's 39.
They're gonna cook you no matter what.
He's 39. He's gonna be doing TikTok dances in the media room.
He's not Gen Z. I think Hertzler is Gen Z, right? Hertzler is still millennial. This is a millennial.
No. He's Gen Z, right?
No, what's Gen Z? Do we know?
Gen Z is after after 90 something. I forgot what year, but
Gen years. Z is 1997 to 2012.
Got it.
So he's just out of it. He's still millennial.
Okay. So he's at the tail end. All right.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sure he can move a little bit and do some TikTok dances. Don't worry about it. Though let's not sell Hurts.
Yeah,
he'll
figure it out. Yeah.
Okay. There's still time. You know? Yeah. But yeah, this is, I think, just maybe having this younger manager, maybe connect with the players in a different way. So yeah, I'm a bad Manchester United, I think, is not helpful for the Premier League, and they need to get out of this wretched hole that they are in. So we'll see what he can do. All right, let's wrap up there. Shout out again to Brian Ford. Thank you so much for hanging out with us, talking to Brad. Go pick up the book, Fanny Dulce. We'll be back on Monday. Hope you enjoy your Halloween. I'm about to take my son
trick-or-treating for the first time.
So it's gonna be great.
What's your favorite candy on Halloween?
My favorite candy on Halloween, probably Reese's Pieces.
That's what size? Like, they're different, bro.
Size doesn't matter, bro.
Oh, wait, the pieces, the little M&M looking joints?
No, Reese's Pieces.
The whole thing.
Oh, peanut butter cups or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, the peanut butter cup. But which one, the gold foil or the OG?
Gold foil. The OG, a little too much.
See, now we're talking.
Too much Reese's.
Perfect ratio. You're saying no?
No, the big one is so much better. The big pumpkin-shaped one. Yeah, that's way better than the little guys. Oh, come on.
It's just a lot.
Wait, the pumpkin shape?
Yes, that's the most elite of the shape.
The one that doesn't even have the little cup?
No, I think it doesn't have the wrapping on it.
No, I don't got no cup.
No, that's the best one.
Nah, bro, you broken. What happened?
No.
Okay.
Come on. It's got a right chocolate to peanut butter ratio. That one.
Yeah.
But you still need the little gold foil. Gold foil's elite.
I don't need the foil.
But the foil says something.
It tells you about the quality.
It feels elite
that you're about
it?
To have. Yeah, yeah.
It feels like that's what you're eating is like sitting in a bowl in a Toyota dealership. What we're talking about is in a Porsche dealership.
Oh please,
gold foil.
No, I want the quantity. I want the big.
Got it.
Grab a couple of the gold foil. Tommy, we'll talk about it. We'll figure this out.
All right, everybody. Thank you again for tuning in. We'll be back on Monday with
nobody asked me mine. By
brand
way.
New episode.
Alexis,
but,
please.
Huh?
What's yours?
My favorite?
Yeah.
You guys really want to know?
I mean, Emmy wants
I
to know.
I do.
Dude, first of all, not the mini Snickers, but the fun size. You know what I'm talking about? The medium size?
Okay. Yeah.
Done. Give me five of those. I'm good.
Wait, make up.
Five of those and a cup of coffee.
All right. Look at
that. Was even me as a child. I'm like, that one cafe. You know,
Alexis talking about his favorite breakfast.
Yeah.
All right.
Also, shouts to that weird strawberry sucking candy that the bag, the little wrapper, it looks like a strawberry. You know what I'm talking about?
Old ladies have. Yes, yes.
Bro, shouts to
those
that.
Those are called something that I can't remember what it is.
They're
called
like penny candies, is what I would call them.
It's grandma candy.
Yeah, right. It is, but that weird syrup inside.
All right. We'll be back on Monday. Have a good weekend, everybody. Peace.
Love you guys.